94.3 WYBC, the rhythm of the city. I'm Juan Castillo, and this is the Electric Drum, very special edition of the Electric Drum. And we are here today to talk about the life of Jimmy Griffin. This is a brother who was just a peace warrior, civil rights activist. I knew him very, very well in his early years as president of NAACP. I have with me in my panel today, I have Warren Leach, also Monroe Webster, and Michelle Turner, blast from the past, former Electric Drum host. And you know, we actually talked a little bit about Jimmy before I decided to do this. And we both thought it was extremely important for us to let the community know what this great man was all about. So let's get started with you, Michelle. Let's talk a little bit about him. I know you've got the some information on him.
Yeah, and let me just say, you know, one of the reasons why I called Juan was because mainstream press did not cover this. And Jimmy deserved it, love or hate him. You know, he spoke truth to power. Jimmy was born January 11th, 1944 in Columbia, South Carolina, to Maceo and Nancy Jacobs Griffin. Other than his parents, he was predeceased by his brother Maceo Jr., sisters Annie Lisa Kenyon and Clarabelle Yates. He leaves to cherish his memory his wife Joyce, daughter Bernadine Jordan, son Michael Clinton, stepson Mark, grandchildren Nicole, Oliver, Joseph, Cora, Emma, Jaden, Mark, Sean, and Justice. Great-grands Jalen, Julez, Tyvon, and Mira. He's also survived by his sister, Lily Bell Griffin Crosby, brother Robert Lee Griffin, and a host of nieces, nephews, cousins. Jimmy had a curious, if you will, sharp and inquisitive mind. He could have achieved greatness in any field, but he was influenced by past and present struggles of some people. The history of the civil rights movements and current conditions fueled his passion for change, whether it was the young people in his personal life or those in the community. Jimmy spent the majority of his life helping. He had a vision of what people could be and was dedicated to the betterment of the community. At age 24, he was drafted into the Army and stationed about 2 years in Korea. Upon his discharge, he began his life commitment to community work. He was influenced by injustices, discriminations, and different experiences while stationed in Korea. While serving his country, Jimmy earned his GED, and during his service was ranked an infantry sergeant. When he returned with an honorable discharge, he got his associate's degree from Housatonic, graduating with high honors, and became one of the first veteran administrative coordinators of Bridgeport. He set up the Vietnam of America programs with emphasis on assuring veterans received the assistance they deserved. He was also instrumental in working on the Million Man March in 1992. And during those early years, he also worked for community action programs. He held numerous positions, most of which reflected his skills and his desires to enhance self-sufficiency. Among his various posts, he was honored to serve as the Waterbury chapter of the NAACP as local president and later as NAACP statewide branch's president. In addition, he was head of the Waterbury Center for Economic and Social Justice. He worked at New Opportunities in Waterbury for a number of years. He was proud to have run for mayor twice in the city of Waterbury, and his campaign slogan was, "Gimme Jimmy."
Gimme Jimmy.
And later on endorsed and supported a number of individuals in the community and in the political arena. Johanna Haynes was one of those folks. Jimmy was unique. His charisma and persuasiveness were gifts from God, and he put them to use. Jimmy received many, many accolades, honoring his community work and achievements. And there's more, but for the sake of time, I'm going to say, Jimmy, rest in peace and truth to power.
Yes. Well, we're going to come back to you, Michelle, to talk about, you know, your relationship with him. But let's go to Monroe Webster, who was also a former NAACP president, and he also worked with Jimmy. How you doing?
Doing great. Thank you, Juan.
Yes. Tell us about your relationship with him.
I had a tremendously great relationship with Jimmy. Early years, when I came to Waterbury, basically, let me see, probably 1990. And, Jimmy's the one that got me involved with the NAACP at the time here in Waterbury. And so pretty much wherever Jimmy would go, he would invite me to go with him. I enjoyed going. I enjoyed learning, kind of learning the ropes. He was one that would, go around to various cities to see what was going on, to kind of educate and direct anyone that needed help. He wasn't afraid to, as we all know, he wasn't afraid to speak out, to encourage folks. He was an encourager. He was one that wanted to see the branches in particular succeed. He wanted to see the leadership within the African-American community speak out against injustice, or just speak up where there was any injustice. His concern was that there were so many people that would just, that were in leadership that maybe had an opportunity to say something, but really chose to sit back and just, go along with the status quo. And that was one of the things that most, irritated him might be a good word, in terms of, really trying to make a difference. In the cities. I mean, not just in Waterbury, particularly in Waterbury, but wherever he was. I remember, I tell people that back when we would go to conventions, statewide conventions, Jimmy and I would room together. I mean, that's just how close we were at the time. And, we had some great laughs, things would happen and, we would recount those situations and just smile and just have a belly laugh about, things that went on. Jimmy was, he was serious. He had a willingness, to voice, unpopular opinions. And that, I think, for the most part, is what, got him noticed. He irritated folks, but he didn't care about that. He was about, doing the job of the people. He was about doing the business of the people and making a difference in the lives of folks. One of the things, even here in Waterbury, the newspaper, the Republican American, he led a boycott against the newspaper because the newspaper was not highlighting African-American events and African-American people. And, just a sample of some of the things, that Jimmy did. If I can go back, I'm listening to the obituary that Michelle talked about, and yes, he did run for mayor twice. It's my understanding that he also ran for state representative. He also ran for state senator. Jimmy was well known. I think if we go out and look at all the different light poles or telephone poles or what have you in the city, we would find a sticker, at least one sticker that's still there that says "Gimme Jimmy." So you talk about someone that made a mark, in the city.
Yes.
That's the first person I think most all of us would think of, would speak of.
Right. Warren Leach, who now has taken over in as far as in Jimmy's types of leadership direction with the city, young man who is doing a lot of great things in the community. And you know, I reached out to Warren first, you know, because, you know, me and him speak often. And when I mentioned about Jimmy, he said, Warren, I'm in, you know. So my brother, tell us about your relationship with Jimmy, man, and historically your relationship.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for thinking enough of me to reach out. Let me say that first. And, you know, Mr. Webster there, he kind of encapsulated a lot of what Jimmy was. And Monroe Webster was one of the first people that I thought of when you reached out to me, because I'm about 10 years younger. And so Monroe, he's a contemporary of Jimmy's, and he just mentioned a few things that I did not know. My relationship with Jimmy took a couple of different iterations. I just turned 63. So in the early to mid 70s, you know, this was a time in the community of great change and overhaul for Black people. And, you know, I'm learning, as Monroe mentioned, and just Jimmy probably learned, that, you know, when you say things that are not comfortable or popular, you're not always going to be liked, but those things need to be brought up. Those conversations need to be had. In the early days, this is what I remember about Jimmy Grimm, because I didn't know him personally until later. That's what I mean. Our relationship took two different iterations. Jimmy Griffin was one of those guys where, you know, it's back in the 70s, and, you know, civil rights, the civil rights movement is everywhere. And You had brothers and sisters out there that were standing up, that were taking a stand, that were speaking out, saying, you know, we're not going to live under these conditions anymore. We're not going to tolerate these things. And in Waterbury, Connecticut, everywhere that I saw a movement like that, I saw Jimmy Griffin. Mm-hmm. And looking back at that, a guy like him can inspire you to also be fearless, to not be afraid of the powers mm-hmm. that be.
That's right.
That a brother stands up and says what needs to be said, and they come for you, but we're together in this thing. So you have somebody in leadership, and that kind of energy is flowing down. And as a young man, I didn't think of these things at the time, because I was not personally involved. I was maybe too young, or I didn't have the mindset for that. But, you know, many years later, through some trials and tribulations through addiction, I had this kind of rebirth or rethinking of what my life was supposed to be. And Jimmy saw that, and he recognized it. And he called me up one day to meet him down at Barnes and Noble's. You know, I'll never forget it. Jimmy was a dude, you know, our relationship became complicated later, but I respect him. He's the only one that sat me down and said, listen, you're doing good work out here now. People are going to start to notice you, but here's the real game. These are the real people in the background that you got to be aware of what your stature mm-hmm. is becoming, and mm-hmm. this is what's going to come at you.
Right.
And he apprised me of these situations. If anything, Jimmy knew the real game. He had information, he had knowledge, and he was smart. When you combine those things with that energy he has and that charisma that he had, you can get people to do things. And I honestly have to say that, you know, I tried to model some of what I do after him as far as being fearless. You know, I get a lot of grants, and I get a lot of, you know, help from different organizations. And I have people pull me to the side all the time and say, listen, man, you can't say that stuff about these folks. They're going to stop supporting you, or you won't get this grant. Mm-hmm. This. And I think of Jimmy all the time. You got to be true to what it is that you feel and believe. And if you're saying and doing the right thing, the right people are going to gravitate to those things. And I can honestly say I got that. I don't know that I'm as fearless, but I got that kind of courage to say what needs to be said, regardless of how it's going to bounce back at me. It needs to be done. Those conversations have to be had.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. And Michelle, you knew him. Excuse me. You knew him through being a journalist. And because he was always in the news and you were right there in the middle of it. But then you got to know him. So talk to me about your history.
OK, well, let me just put it out there. Point of personal privilege. Jimmy's sister was married to my mother's brother.
Wow.
So okay. Grew up with Jimmy. And so when I started the journalism piece, you know, he would look at me and start laughing and say, "Can't believe you're a reporter. How good are you? Are you really going to cover the community?" Mm. You know, and I said, "Well, Jimmy, I have to cover a little bit of everybody. So that's my job." He said, "All right, I'll see how you do. I'll be watching you." So I ran into him at an NAACP event. And he said, "You know, you're not bad." He said, I really wish that community a little bit more, you know, and when you're starting out, it's a different thing than being, you know, a lead reporter or a managing editor. When you're a reporter, you got to go where they tell you to go. But I always made sure that if Jimmy was in the room, that I talked to him. And I always made sure that I wrote what he said. Because, yes, his battle with the Waterbury Republican American is legendary.
Yes.
Every time they would print something, Jimmy would be on them. And he would write letters to the editor to make sure that they got seen, you know, and that the public really, truly knew that he was watching the paper. And when he led that boycott, it was tried to downplay it. You know, "Oh, it's not a big deal. You know, Jimmy's a rabble rouser. Everybody knows Jimmy. He's doing this for publicity." But I think he touched something in the people. And the community supported him. And they came out because they felt as if this is our town. It's more than just the education and covering tax meetings and, you know, the garbage strike, so to speak. We have good, positive things going on in our community. We work hard in our community. And people don't get that impression because you all don't cover it. And so what Jimmy did, and they weren't the only ones, you know, Channel 8 got a little taste of Jimmy at one point. Mm-hmm. You know, he was the guy that made sure that if there was something not right, controversial, or needed to be talked about, it got talked about. And even when I did the electric drum, you know, he called me up, "Hey, it's Jimmy." I say, "Hey, Jimmy." And I just let him talk. I didn't try to stop him. And if I felt there was something that needed to be corrected in a journalistic way, then I say, "Wait a minute, Jimmy, back up." then he back up a little bit. But you know, remember too, when he started to have controversy with the NAACP, and he would have all of these handwritten notes and articles that he printed, and he would come to you and say, "You got to read this." I'm like, "Jimmy, that's 3 legal pads worth of stuff that you've written by hand. You really want me to sit down and read this?" So we would talk about it. And I would say to him, "Well, Jimmy, you know, we have to look at this from a different standpoint. It can't all be personal. You know, you got to give me more things that are balanced and make sense." So, you know, we went through it a little bit with that. But I think Jimmy made an impression because he, as everybody has said, he didn't care. He didn't care who you were. He didn't care who ran whatever. He didn't care about your influence. If he thought it was wrong and if he thought it was against the community, he spoke up, he spoke out. Whether you liked it or not.
Absolutely.
You know.
I'm gonna, you know, talk a little bit about Jimmy and his, you know, my relationship with him. But in the mm-hmm. meantime, you guys could also think about that one thing, that story or situation where you spoke with him and things that he might have said to you that, you know, will live on in your lives, right? Just think about that while I do my thing, right? So I'm running the WYBC, so I get in the position of power at YBC. So I get a call from Jimmy. He said, "Yo, I heard you got the job." So I'm like, "Yes, thank you. I had worked with Jimmy and before that, you know, with the Million Man March, mm-hmm. and with numerous, you know, things that he was doing in the community in Waterbury. But once I got the job, you know, he came to me from a different direction. Like, listen, not many of us are going to be put in the position that you're in. And I know it's going to be difficult because you got a lot of friends out there, and now you got to deal with the corporations, and you got to deal with the advertisers, and you got to deal with all of that. So, but I want to tell you something. The job can become more important than what you stand for. So when you get to a point when you got to make a decision, you got to go with that because you're not going to be able to live with yourself. Now, he lived his life that way, right? So I had to respect that, what he said to me. I had to respect it. And it's interesting because the Channel 8 thing, right? You know, he had, you know, at the time, you know, Channel 8, we were doing traffic and weather with them and all of that, right? So he called me because, you know, Michelle was doing the show. You know, so he called me and he said, you know, I'm going to call Michelle and are you going to have any problems with it? I said, you remember that conversation that we had back then, you know, when I first got the job? And he said, yeah, I remember. He said, so why are you calling me? I mean, you know, you helped me to grow into the man that I am today, right? That's without question that you're going to be talking to Michelle about whatever you want to talk about. And Channel 8, if whatever they doing, if it's not in a positive manner for the Black community, I'm not standing in front of that. Now, you know, I'm going to get some flack just like you told me that I would, right? But this is where I stand. And so that was my story with him. Now, but in addition to that, right, I just want to say this, right? You know, I think one of you said fearless, right? I've never met anybody in my life that was fearless like him, that he was willing to do anything for Black people, anything. And whatever the pushback was going to be, it didn't matter. Never met anyone like him. And watching him as a young man, you know, being in a position to provide some leadership for our community, you know, he was the guy that I had to look at because I knew in my heart that he was telling me the right thing. And I saw what he was going through when he did that. Oh, I saw it. But I realized that in order for me to get through that, I had to be fearless.
Yeah.
And that's what he did for me. I'm going to go back to Monroe Webster, former NAACP president in Waterbury. Is there any story in particular that you want to share with us?
I don't know if there's a particular story. I'm thinking and you know, going through my mind as I'm listening to you. And I mean, there was just so much going on. You know, you talk about Jimmy being fearless. Again, he educated me. He was a mentor. You know, and so, you know, he had to tell me, you know, he encouraged me, saying, you know, you got to stand up for yourself. You got to stand up for what you believe, regardless of whatever pushback you might get. And you are going to get pushback. You know, you've got to stand flat footed and believe. But if you believe in what you're doing, you've got to stand firm in what you're doing. And some people are going to be with you. The thing was, you know, he said that, you know, that they may not be vocal, but, you know, behind the scenes, they're going to support you. But the ones that don't support you are the ones that you're going to hit, you get the most noise from. And I said, well, gee, I said, you know, that's not very encouraging. I mean, how am I going to be encouraged? How am I going to know that, you know, I'm doing the right thing? And he said, well, you know, you can't go by. You can't put your finger up and go by, you know, the direction that the wind is blowing. You've got to know that what you're doing is the right thing, that you believe in what you're doing and stand firm in that. And, you know, I have always remembered that, you know, just down through life, you know, all things that I've done, you know, in church, you know, I'm a deacon in the church, and just, you know, the things that go on, just believing what is right. You're never going to have everybody that's going to agree with you. And that, you know, that's just life. I think about, I mean, there are so many situations. Just an example of just election procedures. Jimmy was a stickler, stickler about election procedures. And, you know, he jumped on me. He jumped on other, you know, other persons in authority. And, you know, when it came time to, you know, have elections, you know, local elections. Yeah, I mean, there's just so much. I think about, you know, just the people in Waterbury. He was very dissatisfied, very upset with just the attitudes or the nature, the lackadaisical nature that so many of the Black folks had in Waterbury that weren't willing to speak up. And, you know, he talked about it as his slave mentality, if you will.
Yes.
And, you know, it just irritated him, and he worked hard. He worked very hard to turn that around.
Yeah, he was ahead of his time. You know, Black Lives Matter, Jimmy lived that.
Oh, right? Yes, for sure.
So, you know, I'm going to bring it over to Warren Leach. You know, and it's interesting because, you know, me and Warren have had a lot of conversations about communication, right? And in this world of texting, And you know, and email and all of that it was important for people to talk to each other personally on the phone, face to face, because that's what Jimmy was about. Because he would, you know,
you got that phone call.
You got that phone call, right, Michelle? Warren, tell us, is anything that you can remember about him that you can share with us?
I can tell you something. It's not a specific personal one-on-one story. And by the way, I 100% agree with you about the communication thing. You know, you want to take your cause or your issue directly to where it needs to go and do those things face to face. You know, I think Jimmy had been probably misquoted or misconstrued enough in the media and such that he probably felt like that was the best thing to do. I'm going to show up and tell you this thing nose to nose. And I live that now. And I got that from him. Don't tap on the keys at me, man. I'll come and see you in a little bit, and we're gonna work this out. And you well know, Juan, you and I worked the thing out that I had wrong.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? But that's what brothers and sisters have to do in this world, because all we have is each other. I can tell you that I have been doing community work for since 2013, more or less. And in the beginning, it started off as just little things. I was coming out of addiction, and I just wanted to do something. I was trying to look for some kind of purpose in life. And you know, God bless our people. Sometimes to get folks out to volunteer or do a thing, and you got to feed them sometimes. Sometimes it has to be entertainment, something. You got to draw folks in and then hit them around the side with the information. That's my technique now. And Jimmy, this was annoying to me. But it did cause me to take a look at what I was doing and how to try to progress it. So, you know, we have a very big festival here every year. It gets bigger every year. And, you know, we had four headlining acts this year. And it brings the people together. 2,000 people, you know, show up and it's entertaining. But at the same time, we bring in community resources and educational things. And if you have some sort of cause or goal, we'll put you on a stage, give you a microphone. And, you know, generally, we want people to come and have a good time, but we also want to fill the place with resources and information. But in the beginning, you know, I was satisfied to have a concert and have some people come out and take a lot of pictures and, hey, look what those guys did. And Jimmy would go on social media and rail on and on about Black folks only interested in entertainment. Black folks, all they want is some ribs. You know, just and I'm over here thinking, you know, I'm just kind of new to this, learning this stuff. And he had been encouraging in the beginning, and it was a source of annoyance to me. But what I can tell you that it inspired was a pivot to look towards economic development, education, and more serious matters, which, you know, Mr. Webster can tell you right now, you know, our group, we have youth financial literacy courses, we have Afro-Latin history and civic engagement, social emotional learning. So I may have come to those things at some point, but part of it was to show Jimmy and whoever else was out there looking, listen, we ain't just about putting some folks on the stage with a microphone. So that pivot inspire me, and now thinking about it, even just as I'm talking about it, is we have a lot of need out here. We have folks going to backpack giveaways, school giveaways, turkey giveaways, Toys for Tots, this, that, and the other. And part of the focus that he inspired in me was, why are our people consistently needy? What are the conditions that need to be addressed so that we are not trying to manage these problems at the back end, as opposed to making foundational change that helps us thrive, grow generational wealth, and do all of the things that will be a sustainable atmosphere. And so, you know, in a small way, but in a significant way, he put in my head, well, I'll show you I'm about more than what you think. And listen, you can take inspiration from wherever you get it. I would say that was his way to challenge the status quo, even if it's his own people.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, what we did was, Jimmy Spirit is with us right now, you know, because like all the things that I'm hearing from all of you, his words, you know, like his spirit and what he was all about. Michelle, I'm going to give you the last word.
But, you know, my recollections of Jimmy are many. I think probably the one that stands out the most is how proud he was that he was a part of the Million Man March, yes, and not, you know, somebody who attended, or that, he was an organizer for his area.
Right.
It was just the fact that brothers had come together.
Yeah, and I remember that. Yep.
Wanted that always. He always wanted Black men to come out, speak up, be active in their communities. And so when the Million Man March really, truly started to pick up steam, he was so proud and he was so happy. And I never will forget him saying to me, this is the beginning of our community turning around because we have got Black men involved. And that was his thing.
Yes, you know, absolutely.
He was funny because he was like, I don't have to worry about sisters. Sisters gonna come out, they're gonna cook, they're gonna bring the kids, they're gonna come. It's not them I'm concerned about. And he didn't mean it in a malicious way. His point was, Black women always do the heavy lifting. So it's time for Black men to step up and support not only their women, but their children and their community.
Yes.
And I think more than anything else, what needs to be remembered about Jimmy is what we all said, and that is he spoke truth to power. And you're not going to get too many people who do that because they feel like they've got a lot to lose. Jimmy didn't care one way or the other, right, whether he had a lot to lose or not. It was about speaking up for his community. And he believed in speaking up for his community.
Well, his legacy is in the three of us, the four of us who are here today. But he also left a legacy in Waterbury proper. And all the other folks, you know, who remember him and were influenced by him. And I want to thank all of you for being a part of this. This was something that needed to happen. And I thank you. very, very much.
Juan, I would. There's a press statement that I was able to capture, and I would love to be able to read that. Obviously, you can edit it out if need be, or edit out excerpts of it. Do I have your permission to read it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. This is from back in 2010, and it was a time when Jimmy was considering another run for presidency of, I think, the state NAACP. He was looking to run again, and what he said was that he did this press release saying that he's dropping out his bid in an effort to eliminate any further division that could cause could be caused in the African-American community. It says Griffin, who is outspoken about issues concerning discrimination, said it seems that most Black people in Waterbury remain comfortable with being treated like they have not been freed from slavery some 150 years after the Emancipation Proclamation. And my mindset is too far advanced to accept such a notion. I grew up in this city, and I have watched the African-American population neglected by its city government and some of its own leadership, like the days on the plantations of the South. People can say whatever they want about why the conditions that exist in our neighborhoods do, but it's not the white people who have continued to keep you down. It is you, my brothers and sisters, and it's time to get up and save our children, Griffin said. The NAACP has lost its purpose and direction in attempts to become something it's not. We have been the defenders of injustice throughout our 101-year history against our people, and when we fail to deliver on that promise, we are no longer relevant. I'm tired of the so-called leadership in the African-American community sitting back while our young people's minds are destroyed by drugs and alcohol, where the unemployment rate is almost double that of whites, where the infant mortality rate is high, and where the education of our children is so poor they have no history of who they are. I love the NAACP and my people, but I cannot sit around and watch what is going on in this city and say nothing about it. My life's mission is to bring equality to my people at any cost. And if giving up a possible position to return to the NAACP helm will help further that cause, it is very little to sacrifice. Griffin finally said, I am not dropping out of the struggle by a long shot, but I wanted to express the need for unity in order for us to lift ourselves from the bottom in Waterbury, because we have so much work to do. And again, I think that just kind of encapsulates, yes, you know, everything that he was about.
Yes,
just making a difference in the lives of the people that he loved.
And
thank
I
you.
Think too, if I can jump in here real quick, later in his life, you know, he started to really look at, and he always thought about it, but he started to speak about it more, Black and brown people around the world, you know, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. just his neighborhood, not just the state, not just the U.S., but really thinking about what are we doing and why can't we be unified? Why can't we have Pan-Africanism? Why can't we join together with the Latino community? I mean, he was really thinking in terms of a worldwide coming together of people of color. Mm. And even the last few Facebook posts, if you look at them, he starts to talk about the Israeli-Palestine conflict and how we as African Americans should be speaking up more for the Palestinians. So it's a very interesting way that he came full circle with that, you know, and to love people. That was his two main things. And he supported Steve Mullins for his bid as West Haven mayor. That's right. Also posted about Johanna Haynes. Yes. So I think, you know, to the end, Jimmy was Jimmy. Gimme Jimmy.
All the way. Jimmy.
With that said, I want to thank all of you again. This is Juan Castillo. This is the Electric Drum on 94.3 WYBC.